Everybody, Scott here. I assume you know it's Scott, not Allison. And if you don't, we've done something wrong at this point with our vocal tone. Continuing on with our enjoying of the summer, which means doing the least work possible, we're decided to revisit some of our favorite episodes from the past on podcasts. We've done it for almost 5 years now, and we had no idea where it was going to go or what was going to happen once we started it. Since we very rarely have guests, there's a reason why we do have the select few we do, because we think they're bonkers in a good way. We love them. The value they add is crazy. The what they bring to not only the show, but to our lives is something. So we've only had 3 guests ever, and one of those guests we've had twice. And that would be the one and only Chris Farias. So this week and next, we're going to play you his guest episodes. You'll see a difference in how Allison and I talk, because we go from episode 30 and then we go to episode 119. And you should see a noticeable difference in everything we do on the show. You'll notice there is no time limit on the first one this week, and you'll see what that means. And a special note as well, during this episode and the next one, you'll notice Chris Farias is one of the founders of a company called Kite String that we used to create all of our visuals and our keeper of our brand. Chris is no longer with Kite String. He's now with Unicorn Rebellion. He founded a company with his wonderful fiance, and by the time you're listening to this, husband, Jared. We want to say special congratulations to Chris and Jared on your nuptials in Mexico. We're so happy. We're so proud to call you friends. So please enjoy this rebroadcast of Unpodcast episode 30.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
It was my birthday.
It was yesterday. Woo!
And it won't be when you listen to this. So it'll be a few weeks after, but it was.
Happy birthday, Scott.
And happy welcome to you, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Farias with us, everyone.
Farias.
Farias. For those that aren't the initiated, he was on the Vegas 30 episode we just recorded. So if you want to go to that, go to thevegas30.com, which is the sister podcast of this one. This is the Unpodcast. Thank you for arriving. Thank you for joining us. Hello, Allison.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, so Chris, just give you context of who and why and what and wow.
We found him outside.
We found him on Kipling, and he was just kind of...
He was wandering.
It was kind of like a stationary wander. He was like kind of wandering in his eyes.
I was looking for a 7-Eleven.
And so we brought him in here.
Yeah. Chris, we said we wouldn't have guests, but we lied.
And, Chris isn't a guest. He's just an experience.
Oh, I was going to say family, but I guess experience is fine.
But isn't family experiences?
I have so many experiences.
Right. We were just talking about that. Chris is the principal and the co-founder of Kite String Branding Studio in the wonderful city of Hamilton. And he's the man responsible for what you see behind us, the banner. If you're watching this on the YouTubes, on the line, it is our banner. He's the designer of everything that we go for unmarketing in the world. He designed these fine stickers, like this one here, which is End Email Reply All, which is one of the top getters of people that they want the stickers, this one. So thank you.
You're
anything
very
visual,
welcome.
And if I do anything visual and I don't involve Chris, he gets mad.
Oh, God. Yeah. Our website?
Oh, God. He's on the website. He does the designs. Everything we do, he makes sure we look much better than we actually are.
I like when you when I see somebody else doing something for events, and I'm like, oh, my God. I can't tell you how many times I've restarted designing, and I was like, Chris, you can't do this. You can't,
because events will bring me in to talk, but they'll do the flyer. It has nothing to do with me designing it or anything.
And no, it's not you.
I sent one to you 2 weeks ago.
I know you did.
I don't think I even. I just said I'm just going to leave this here.
And
that's
I
the email was
in my mouth.
It's like a banner made by something in grade 10 or 9. Nothing wrong with being in grade 10 or 11 or 12 or anything like that. We have a co-op student in the fine confines of the studio again, so.
We're on our best behavior.
We are always on our best behavior anyways, but even a uber best behavior here. And we were talking right before we had to start rolling because
of the conversation of we were originally talking about people seeing Allison and saying, "What you're much
yeah, they'd be taller, or I'm taller than I don't know how tall they think I'm going to be."
And I see Twitter people and they say picture. I'm much taller than they thought, which yeah. they only see your head.
Like I thought you'd be taller.
And Chris, you have people as well coming up to you.
I'm fatter than I am online, but I have Photoshop, so I don't know. Why they're surprised.
Being a designer has its privileges.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I always look good online.
You guys ever meet somebody in person when you've talked to them on social, you know, a local event, a networking event, and they show up and they're like, hey, I'm this person. And you're like, are you?
Yeah.
You see, it's like a bad dating profile. Yeah. The bad dating profile thing where the picture was from 1989 or something. And you meet them and they say, I'm Jeff. You're like, are you?
Yeah. Are you sure you are?
Are you? Because that's not you.
Well, I think they get stuck in this time warp where they thought they looked really good in the 80s in this one picture that they think they look their best and they want to keep that forever and they put it on everything and they won't change it. But like, you really need to update that because like we're going to see you sooner or later.
And that's where the big, and I think it actually jars people's almost like a trust thing when you see them, you're like, wow, that's not what you look like in your profile photo.
And it's just that people are saying that I'm short. Is that what it is? It's just a nice way.
I don't think you're short.
It's just a nice
way. How tall are you?
5'3", but 4-ish.
5'4"-ish?
Ish.
That's pretty good.
Average.
That's pretty average.
Yeah. Chris is the only person around that could ask Allison her height. And
oh, yeah, totally. He could ask me whatever. He could ask me whatever he wants. And I'll tell him the truth.
Part of the circle.
But he could totally, whatever he wants. But right. I don't understand. It's just, they want to say you're shorter. You're short.
But then what advice do you give somebody then who, let's say they're starting out. So if obviously I assume your advice from being the branding side of things is that get a hot, you know, a professional shot that makes you look great, but it looks like you still.
Oh, for sure.
What if, let's talk to people, the starter, the bootstrapper, the person who can't do what we did for the site, or you know, hire a pro, have a pro design. Somebody's on their own, they can't do it. But these are the guys who are doing the arm reach selfie shot, they're doing the one. What do you suggest to them? How can you do a potentially good looking shot?
Get yourself a smartphone, get an iPhone, use that camera. It's a good camera,
right? Yeah. It is.
Am I wrong?
But the outward facing camera, not the inwards one.
Oh, yeah, this one.
It's a better resolution.
Yes, definitely. Get somebody else to hold it, make sure that the sun is facing you and not the opposite, or you will just look like you're in the dark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then throw a filter on it, like to send it into Instagram and put a, everything looks better with a filter except for food. There's no good filter for food. I've learned.
Try putting a filter on a poop cake.
Doesn't work.
That's the first time that sentence has ever been said on the planet.
Yesterday,
ever.
Scott said, I pinned. Scott said, I pinned my poop cake yesterday. That was my favorite.
I pinned my poop cake.
For my birthday, my 23rd birthday, Allison, 3 weeks ago.
Did you say 23?
Yeah, I did.
It's funny. You look younger online.
I thought it was funny,
17.
But not that funny. So, a few weeks ago, she's like, "What kind of cake do you want?" And I'm like, "Well, poop cake." And we've surveyed the unlisteners and the unfans, and you know, they don't like me talking about it too much. But and so she took my bluff and made me a poop cake.
We'll put a picture of it.
We'll put a picture on the episode on podcast.com.
It looks so good.
It was awesome. I make really good cakes.
Chocolate pound cake.
Yeah, all the way
Martha Stewart's chocolate pound cake.
It was really good.
You made Martha Stewart's chocolate pound cake.
I do. I make really good birthday cakes.
So she didn't upset you after the whole like.
No, I love Martha Stewart. We've talked about this before. This has been a
recurring theme. So if you ever want to listen to the podcast, go ahead.
I have listened to that one. I wasn't sure if it's changed. No. I heard that one.
So Martha Stewart is one of my. We talked about impenetrable brands, but like something that you love so much that I just don't care.
And but whatever they do, no matter what they do, you'll still love them.
And he asked me what these people would have to do, and there's a few of them, and I basically said something like that she'd have to be setting up the kitchen for whoever has World War III. Like, that's how much she has to do.
Like, Lululemon would have to outfit the new Nazis with pants.
In the kitchen with
for me to stop wearing Lululemon.
She would have to be baking a cake for Nazis to make it not like.
So as long as Martha doesn't do that, I'm rolling with Martha, because I love Martha Stewart.
So, felon, no problem.
Don't care.
Hates bloggers.
Don't
no
care.
Problem.
Doesn't matter.
No, don't care.
Rich, don't care.
Wow. Yeah.
No, I love Martha Stewart.
And here's the thing. I get the results from that. I get to eat the food and the cakes, and I get the poop cake, and I get the turkey and the brisket, and I get the food that comes with that.
So he loves Martha Stewart.
I'm a big Martha fan now.
And she's tested it all out, and it's not like you're not just pulling it off Pinterest. And you're not
I've
sure
never had
gonna...
a recipe not work, ever, We've in years. Years and years.
The royal we. You've tried a bunch of different recipes with us, and everything's been great. Everything's been amazing. So it is that brand. The
untouchable. I don't think she would have approved of the poop cake necessarily.
We have to get the picture to her.
It was delicious.
How we use that cake. It's amazing. It is Absolutely amazing. And so, and that to me is back to the thing where I think Allison was, so we interviewed Kite String for the book for Unselling coming up, you know, it's coming out October 1st. And one of the parts within that, before we get into the full community thing, was talking about the difference of, as a social picture, and you are the mastermind behind the @KiteString account on Twitter, which is a fantastic, that's how we connected and we met them originally. And the difference you're talking about.
So yeah, Chris, remember you were talking about the testing out using a picture instead of you.
Oh, yes.
Your face. You tested out using a logo instead.
So we did a rebrand probably, a year ago. And I wanted to test it out because I do get a lot of flack of like, because I work with a lot of entrepreneurs who are like, I don't want to put my picture. I don't want to be the face of it. And I can't control that. If whatever you want to do, you do. Right. I can only give you my experience and my opinion. So I wanted to test it out. And I know that's kind of risky, but so I put our logo up as our avatar, and I left it up for I think 3 months, and like our interactions and our engagement and people responding and people replying, it just dropped big time. And I wasn't measuring through any sort of fancy thing. I just know if somebody is responding to me or not. And the minute I put my picture back up, it was boom, people are talking to a person again. It was night and day. It was.
Yeah, I think that's really important to see. And it also goes back to you talking about case studies. Like, the only really important case study you should be looking at is the one you're doing for yourself or your business right now. Right. And that may not always be true for everyone, but Chris tried it out and had really dramatic results with testing it out. And I think it's really important.
And here's the behind the curtain of that, where it works for you because you have a personality-driven brand that also it works really well in a Twitter format, that you are personable and approachable and you have a great personality. And so the people had that expectation before with you. So somebody who didn't have that personality, maybe a logo would make a difference.
Yeah, they might have even thought it wasn't you anymore, like that you'd passed it along. Because that's what I would think, I think, if I said something to you and I got a reply and it was your logo. I mean, I think this was still Chris.
Yeah, is this still
like,
Chris?
What's going on? Like,
there's there's your challenge for multiple person run accounts as well, right? Yeah. Where different personalities, where when people say we have to define a brand voice, that's what they mean. They want it to be consistent across the platform.
For sure.
Yeah.
Which is why some brands will put the initials afterward. And you lose that connection. You really
I did do, when I was in Vegas last year for a week, I gave the account to my office producer Stephanie, and I said, you know what, I don't want it to go down for a week, let's put your picture up there and every morning announce that, you know, just so you know, the account's being run by Stephanie. If you have anything you want to talk about, let's talk about it. And she did an amazing job, but I also wanted to show that, like, I trust my employees with that account. That's like, that's an important thing. Like, I have a lot of followers, that's the voice of my brand, and she did an amazing job, and I didn't want it to go dead for
I like that, actually. I think that's a cool way to do it as well.
But didn't you, and you could have let it go dead.
I could have.
And nobody would have known the difference. No. But and here's the thing about hiring, right? Is if you don't want your people to use your account as well, you have a hiring problem.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Then why did you hire that person? If they can't step in. If you can send them to a networking event in town, they should be able to take over your Twitter account.
I trust everybody at KiteString I would be able to give them my password and my account and say, can you please take it over? I've got something I have to do for next week. It's an emergency.
And what's your parameter? What's your rules?
Basically, our rules, they're not very strict, but, you know, don't use profanity. Like, really, there's a few set words.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit's one of them. but, you know, be more creative and be more witty than if you don't have to use those kind of words. What are some of the other ones? Don't say anything bad about competitors.
And there was, like, kindness, I think, what you
said. Be kind.
He said, like, be kind and don't swear, I think.
Yeah, like, that was basically it. Be kind.
Yeah.
Don't really talk bad. I find, at the beginning, I was if there was a product I didn't like, I would go on Twitter and I would just start, like, blasting it. And I try not to do that anymore.
We have a chapter in one of the books with the Flip Video.
Flip Video. That was quite. And I don't do it anymore unless it's a really big concern I have. Like, little. I'm just sick of people. You know, I had to wait. I had to wait in the Starbucks line for 2 hours.
I hate people complain about the Starbucks line.
Like, that's life sometimes. Like, not everything.
Bunch of spoiled
everything
brats.
Is a complaint. So.
Yeah, we're allowed to.
Yeah.
Some of us have built brands on complaining.
So. Don't say anything false or lies or there's just, it's just basically,
it's like it's
be
humanity
a good person and you're fine.
But here's the thing, your clients, you're B2B. So your clients are businesses. And if they see you just trashing businesses every day online, they're going to say, when are we next? And, here's what people don't realize.
The same thing. When am I next?
Yeah. Yeah.
I need to show that I'm not going to do that so that if something happens, somebody else takes a different route.
I can't imagine when I screw up, whenever I never have, but if I ever screw up, there's a line longer than
they're
20,000 people ready just to rip me down because I've been waiting for it. So, but this is what I don't think people get about branding on the overall scale is that they could spend the time on the get a logo done, get the corporate identity done, get the right feel, the vibe, hire the people. But then you, on your individual personal Twitter account, bitch all day about stuff. That is more your brand than almost anything, right? So is that brand continuum?
You are what you tweet. I think I tweeted that.
Visually and what you say and what you do.
Yeah.
There's
how you treat people is really important.
For sure.
Yeah, and that's where... And then all your work is thrown out the window. You know, when a brand comes out there, you can spend all the time in the world doing it and sitting down with it. Because one of the things you guys do, you know, you have that intake type of thing where you sit down and you go over. It's just, it's an overall brand thing. You know, this thing is that you won't just go and say, hey, we're going to design logos as much.
No.
It's a whole procedure, which is one of the things I love about you guys. It's not just, well, okay, what do you want in the logo?
Yeah.
It's everything. What do you want to stand for? What is your company? What is this? What do you like? What do you not like? And so if that voice does not parallel you've come up with, you've broke the brand.
Exactly. Right. And it's also about building brand ambassadors. And I use brand ambassadors because I'm in the branding industry. But really what you're saying is you're making relationships and you're getting friends. Yeah. They're your friends online. And if something does happen, God forbid, I know I have friends out there who, and it's happened a couple times on, not Twitter, on Facebook, where someone has said something that's not true. And I didn't have to say anything because people just stepped in going, that doesn't sound like Chris, that's not the company I know, and and they just solved that problem for me, which is great.
You just give me a name and address and tell me what you want done. That's really what it comes down to.
I'm sending Scott after you.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good threat. That's an all right. You're allowed to throw that threat down.
I think too, in terms of what you guys do, that you sell kind of what you're already doing. Like you, I think you you said that to say people walk in and they want what you have.
Yeah.
So you have to represent that. You can't.
For sure.
You can't say we're going to teach you how to be great and connect if you're not being great and connecting.
Exactly.
So you have to walk
which
the talk.
Is more the norm than anything else nowadays, right?
Yeah, this is what you should do. Yeah. Don't pay attention to what I'm doing.
We don't do
that. Yeah, we don't do that. Yeah. But this is what you should be doing to make social
Twitter's
work.
Twitter's a joke. You should be on Twitter.
You should be
on Twitter. Yeah, it's really important.
I don't think it works. I think you got to walk that talk. And I think that both how you and I have done things to build up early on, especially, we're saying, look, we're going to use the tools that we suggest. Here's why. So we can show experience-wise, and also we learn what works and what doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So you know you might not want to throw that Twitter party. You know you don't want to do these type of things that you hate yourself.
Yeah.
So it makes it a good... So, you know, that was a good 15-minute intro. So, but we're going to... It's going to segue nicely into what we're talking about. And we really want to talk about the, you know, hyper-focused local kind of community type of things today, because speaking of people who start off with a low or no budget, sometimes that's the... What's where you have to plant those roots anyways.
Yep.
Regardless if your business has to be local or not. Let's say, you know, if you're a dentist, you're pretty much going to be doing that thing locally. If you're a real estate agent, it's going to be local. But you know, for yourself, just, you don't necessarily have to do it locally.
No.
So for me, we just got off of a two-week run of keynotes and talks. And we did San Diego, Jacksonville, Orlando, Dallas, Phoenix, Vegas, like a whole bunch of stuff. Jacksonville. So I go down to Jacksonville. Never been to Jacksonville. And home of a team equally as bad as my Lions, as the Jaguars. And so we have a kinship there. And I go there. And I'm hired to keynote this event called One Spark. Never heard of it. And I'm like, okay, cool. And whatever, it's a gig. I go do it, and I'm sure it'll be great because they're bringing me in. So obviously, it's got to be great. So I go down, and I do a little pre-call. We do like almost like a podcast interview with Carl, the guys who's in charge of the speaker series. And we talk, and he's a really good guy. And then he loves marketing. He loves a book. And so he's done his homework. He's like, we've been pulling to get you down here. I'm like, oh, sweet. And so we talk. Great time. So I'm like, I'm going into it liking the client already.
Yeah.
So then I read more about it. And I
get
there.
Which always happens. You always like your clients.
And I love everyone, actually.
There we go. Thank you.
I love every client.
Every client.
But the ones who I want to hang out with are might not be the top list of everybody. So I love my clients. I hate people. So there's a difference. So I go down there. And One Spark is a crowdfunding festival. And I'm actually wearing one of their t-shirts right now that I can't read because it's on me.
One Spark is for creators, humans, artists, makers, bootstrappers, anyone who shares our common passion, action.
Right. So this is One Spark. So One Spark started only a couple years ago, and it was all about, they call them makers. You know, I have the saying, what is this? It's a term, you know, that great book, by the way, Makers by the same guy who wrote The Long Tail. And it's all people who have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they do is they shut down 20 blocks of downtown Jacksonville.
Wow.
And it's all creators, makers, inventors, business owners, and they all have booths.
So cool,
they all
right?
have
sounds
yeah.
so.
They all
I
have
know,
tents.
I was jealous that
so,
I was.
So this is that alone is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's where it jumps to the next level. Every booth has a number on it, and if you think their idea is worth believing in or funding, You just vote for that number, and there is a pool of about $400,000.
Wow.
And the more votes you get, the more of the pool you get.
So great.
Every booth there gets something, whether it's a couple hundred or a few thousand, all the way up to $40,000 or $50,000 for the top ones. And so your job is to sell your idea to everybody walking by. And it's people from making jam, they're selling, to an entire new online type of thing, mm-hmm. to a guy riding a 6-foot-high bone bicycle, he calls it. It's this carved wood giant wheel bicycle, wow. to DJs, to fitness workouts.
It's like Kickstarter
workouts.
In real life,
it's
right?
Literally, it's a yeah. live, yeah, it's very a cool. freaking live
does
Kickstarter.
My vote, do I have to pay for the vote?
No.
Where so does the money
free.
Come from?
So you should, it's actually funded, and one of the main funders is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who bought the team a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And came in, just, you know, took over the city and just funded it. And two years ago, he's like, yeah, give him $1 million. That's cool. He's a billionaire.
Wow.
Made his money in auto parts. And then this year, he's like, give him $3 million. So these are the speaker series. And these are all, so here's it. You go in, you sign up, and here's how the voting works. You've got an app. So you walk around. The app is proximity based. You can only vote if you're
so
in the
cool.
20 block radius.
So they're checking to make sure that people are actually
so you
there.
Can't get your buddies to vote all
yeah,
around the world.
Yeah.
You got to walk real time and vote. You get a vote a day, and it goes 4 days. And by the biggest night, I think it's a Saturday night, Friday, or Saturday night, there's 100,000 people down there.
I thought it was so cool.
There's a food yeah. truck block, two blocks of it, where I lived most of the time.
You camped out.
I had the barbecue truck the whole time. So, but then, and on top of it, they have a speaker series. I was in the library. And you go, and it's all the creators and people who are there, and they sit. So I was one of the speakers. One of the guys who was like the right-hand man of Jim Henson was there. And a whole bunch of creators wow. and stuff were there as a giving. So I got to give a talk. And it was, I'd never been. And that was the, and of course, I walk around. And so I meet up with Jason Sadler, who's the I wear your t-shirt guy, who's great, great guy. Just coming out with a book as well. And he, you know, we meet him. He's like, this is not how it is every week. Like, this is not Jacksonville usually. And, but it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I've been to, I go to, past 4 or 5 years, 200 cities, maybe like that.
Yeah.
Never experienced this. Of community, of connection, of hope, of engagement, of invention.
And I like the importance of meeting people in real life. Like, sometimes it's too easy to like for companies to sit back and try and use Kickstarter or get money virtually. I love the idea that they had to go and set up a booth and show
great,
their
and a
work.
Great challenge of how to get the votes, right? And you know, one was a worm farm. Right, they wanted to create a worm farm. Here's why it's good for the guy walked around with a big worm on a stick and getting your attention. Right, and then there's one was like a 14-year-old singer songwriter, and his dad was out there at front talking about his son and how great, and then his sister was out there too. And he writes songs about bullying.
Oh,
and he's so getting all the kids, and there's a little stage set up for him. Is like, I'm like, how do
that's
you?
Awesome.
And then all the so the first year I was talking to the. One of the main founders, the first year is like, well, it was like all these businesses are like, what? I know this is an inter-. And by the it was over, they're like, oh, okay, I get it. And this year they did it. They're like, come on in all our buildings. It's bringing people. So it was like this really hard kind of to crawl, push to do the first year. And now everybody wants to be a part of it.
Yeah. So do you know what the community was like before this event like started taking place?
It was like a lot of big cities, especially like in Florida and stuff, but they've been hit real hard. And to how do you rejuvenate a city?
Yeah.
How do you rejuvenate a downtown? And you know, without somebody coming up with deep pockets, this event doesn't happen. There's no way. But
you can spend money in a lot of different ways. Yeah. And I love the idea of spending it on the creativity of people who then start businesses and generate more. Like it's an investment in something that's going to grow.
And
I love that.
But you could feel it too.
I'm sure, because you can feel it just listening about it, right?
The volunteers and their pride. The people who are now there's the odd booth that was trying to be salesy and saying, have you voted today yet, before they pitch their idea, but you know, for the most part it was such a cool experience. It was just like all JAX, it's the airport term, that's the JAX is what they're, you know, they're just like every shirt same thing, they're all JAX, they're
that's
all like
awesome.
Just this the love for the city was amazing. And which brings me to, you know, where your guys with Kite String and your love for Hamilton, and how, so there's a large experience here. That's a large example of it.
Yeah.
And you guys are
great.
kind of an individual brand, and why we interviewed you for Unselling and why we wanted to have you on today is what you understand specifically about, you're the best example we could come up with. And it just so happens that you're also, you know, the people in charge of making us look good, is that you define for us embracing of a community.
Yeah.
And so what, Because you guys aren't originally from Hamilton.
No, actually, I don't think anyone is from Hamilton who works at Kite String.
Right.
No one. We're all
So a couple questions then. First, why Hamilton?
That's a good question.
Because you have to understand. Now, I'm going to give you the perspective of Hamilton from an Oakville person.
Yeah.
By the way, Oakville is just that snotty community that every city or state or province has, and we're this one of the snottiest.
Oakville is called Whole Foods in my home.
Yeah.
Do you
want
to go to Whole Foods?
Yeah, which is Oakville, right? So we're you know, it's supposed to be the pretentious city. We're supposed to be, you know, one of the most expensive places to live in Canada. We got taken over by one place in BC recently, and Burlington and Oakville, two of the most expensive sushi, because a lot of head offices are in Toronto. Yeah. People live there and they commute in, type of thing.
And I grew up in Hamilton. I went to university in Hamilton. My first job was doing street homelessness outreach in Hamilton. So I've seen every corner of Hamilton.
So Hamilton is viewed by us as a place we don't go.
No.
It's known as Steel Town. It's a place where all the steel mills are. It's the blue collar, right? It's the Hamilton Tiger
Cats.
They hit really hard in the economy. And it's a place we pass by and say, look at the smokestacks as we go to Niagara Falls or something. So why Hamilton? And tell me about it.
Sure. So I think it's a case of ignorance is bliss. So I'm from the Windsor area, a little town called Kingsville. And after I graduated, I moved to London, Ontario. And even then, I still hadn't really heard of Hamilton. I knew there was a place called Hamilton. I didn't really know where it was. Mm-hmm. And one day my boss said to me, you know, we're moving our company to Hamilton. Will you take this much more money and go there with us? And I went, sure, I don't care. Like, that's a lot of money. Sure. I don't care if you go to the moon. So the next weekend, I was like, well, I better check out Hamilton. So I drove to Hamilton and I found, like, immediately found an awesome apartment that was dirt cheap and beautiful in this gorgeous neighborhood. And I signed the lease that moment. It was the first place I looked at, signed the lease. And I drive back and I tell my friends, oh, I just signed a lease moving to Hamilton. They're like, are you kidding me? You're going to die. You're going to get shot. You're going to get murdered. We're never going to see you again. I was like, what do you mean? I was just there. It was lovely. So I moved to Hamilton about 2 months later and absolutely fell in love with it. I love the community. Being from a small town, I need community. I need being able to walk to the store, walk to wherever. And I need you to know my name. I need to know your name. I need that. I can't live. London, I didn't have that. I used to work actually in Oakville and go to Toronto a lot. And I just didn't have that. No. Right. And I need that. So I was living in Hamilton and there wasn't a lot to do. Hamilton was kind of just starting, and it was dead. There was nothing going on, and I would drive to Toronto all of the time, or Oakville, and I think I met you in I forget where it was. It was
one of the tweet ups at Christmas. I met Chris that night too.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring stuff to the city, so I just went on Twitter, and we actually went on Twitter because of the recession, because we didn't have any money, and all of a sudden it was like recession. What do we do? And I was like, Jen, there's Twitter. We can get on Twitter. Like, we can make connections. We can build friends. We can talk to people. And I went on Twitter, and just not as much as you. I think you did it a lot more than me. But I sat in my underwear on my couch watching TV and just tweeting my heart out.
I sat in my underwear on your couch as well.
Was that you?
Yeah,
I was wondering who that was.
I was very quiet, though. So
would you like a drink? Are you going home anytime soon? And I started bringing stuff to Hamilton. And I'm not saying that I'm the cause of it. I just think that there was a few people who online started to ignite a fire in the city, saying there's a new restaurant, and it opened up the communication. So it wasn't just the mainstream media that was saying there's a new restaurant here. It was immediately the restaurant's up, I'm at the restaurant, I'm tweeting about the restaurant, everyone knows about the restaurant, more people are going to that restaurant, you know what I mean? It was immediate, and everything going on around in the city that just built. And I need to love where I live, and I do believe that if you love where you live and you show it, and you donate your time and you do things for your community, the community is just going to love you right back. And that's like no true words. So that, like, I love my community and my community loves me. Well, most of them. Some of them hate me. But
that's okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, we know about that.
Whatever. Right. But I do. I love them so much. And it's funny that you mentioned this event, because there was a event started in Hamilton called Art Crawl, happening every second Friday of the month. And it was started off small, and then it became bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they created Super Crawl. And for the first couple of years, it wasn't that many people. And then the third year, they asked me to host the main stage. And I introduced, I think it was City in Color. I'm not a big, like, pop Canadian music, but it was something big where everybody was like, I want to see.
Yeah.
And I got on stage and I looked down James Street and I couldn't see the end of the street.
It's amazing.
There was 70,000 people there. And I went, and now City in Color. And I have shivers right now. The energy that swept to me on stage, I know what rock stars must feel. And I didn't even sing. That energy, I was like, oh my God, we turned the corner. Like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. I'm going to cry. I love you, Hamilton. Yeah. It was amazing. But yeah, I think it had a lot to do with social media. I really do. I think it was just the community being able to connect in a different way.
And that's where we look and talk, you know, people say, how do we leverage this? How do we do this? And like, there's almost, it's just so common sense though, that if you love your community, they love you back. And I'm not really sure how to do it before Twitter, to be honest with you. It makes it so much different because of before, what would you do? You'd go to door to door. You go to a chamber of commerce event, which, by the way, both is still legitimate practices, but overlay that with Twitter, with the ongoing virtual conversation and connection. And then you search, hey, this guy's pretty active in Hamilton. Let's see who he follows.
Yeah.
Let's see who she has on a list.
Yeah.
And you start expanding, expanding. But it's focused. And one of the keys about that, people always say Twitter is such a no barriers. And one of the advantages is there is no barrier. You can talk to anybody in the world. But sometimes when you put the wall around to start, it makes it that much easier to then connect. Because you have your common connection thread is going to be Hamilton.
Right? Definitely.
And you're going to be your city.
Definitely. I think that, you're totally right. That's how it started, and that's just how it grew.
I think too, it's really easy sometimes to live somewhere and think that other people are going to do it for you, and that's what Twitter lets you do, is that you can be the person who's talking about where you live. Because Hamilton's an amazing city and has a lot of really great things going for it, having lived there for a long time. But it's almost kind of like, well, I don't want to talk about Hamilton. Like, everyone says they're from Toronto. I don't want to talk about Hamilton. And so taking that on and doing that, I think, is really amazing.
Well, it's changing the brand of the city, because all you see is the negative things.
Yeah.
And the poor, you know, you're coming down Barton Street, you're coming down Burlington Street, and it looks like, you know, like an apocalyptic
Detroit.
Which I love Detroit.
I love Detroit too.
I love Detroit.
But that's what it looks like,
that's
right?
What it looks like. So
Lions.
Yeah. Times were hard.
You need, again, when I talk about brand ambassadors, it's just a bunch of people using a hashtag, talking on Twitter. Those become brand ambassadors. And when someone's from outside the city, they're looking in on Twitter. They're seeing a vibrant culture, full of culture, wonderful people who are helping each other out, who are shopping locally, who are volunteering event after event. That's the brand now. That's not smokestacks. I don't care how many times you drive through the smokestacks. If you see that, you're going to change your opinion.
Yeah.
And it makes people want to come there and be a part of the community. Businesses who see a successful design studio, branding studio in that city, they say, I really always liked Hamilton.
Yeah.
Like, why am I commuting to Toronto when I could set up a company in my hometown?
And there's a difference with when we're talking about, you know, the social connection you can make on places like Twitter, where if you outsource that, right, if you give it to somebody else, you're not going to make that community connection, because it's going to be a little bit false. And then if you've ever met somebody and you found out they weren't the one actually doing the tweets or something, it's just again, it's awkward, it's weird, and you lose that connection. And so that's one of the things, you guys don't do that either for Kitestream, right? You won't do a client social. Is that
no,
right?
I've never done actually. I sat behind their account and tweeted on their behalf.
Yeah.
Because
you could have, though. Like that was the gold rush of the past 3-4 years. Is
I had so many people ask me to do that, and I just don't think it's, I want to say it's not right, but I just don't think I could do it, because I don't know your company like you do. And I can show you how to use the tools, and I can show you some basic like engagement tools. But like, again, it comes down to personality and being a nice person and knowing your company and your culture and your brand promise and all those things, which, you know, I don't know as well as you. You should know those. Those should be like the core of who you are, and you should just spill that out onto social media. So I don't do that.
Is there any time you think a brand should
hire out? Mm-hmm. I don't. That's a really great question. I don't know. What do you think?
No, you can't do that. You can't deflect back to me like that. That's not the way
what
it works.
What do you think, Scott?
Who do you think you're dealing with here?
Pop!
Goddamn Howard Stern podcast. You will not deflect that back to me. But this is the problem, is because agencies have gone for the low-hanging fruit. They have not figured out how to integrate social, because I still believe that it is not a sales and marketing tool directly. It's a connection, a communication, even a customer service tool.
Yeah.
They haven't figured out how to integrate it properly. So they're like, well, we'll just manage it for you, because we can do that on a retainer.
But I think it's going to cost a lot more for an agency to run it for you than you just... Why don't you hire
a really great
personality who loves what you do and have a good
internally
employee?
Yeah, because you would hire a customer service representative. Like, if things got so... You would never say, like... Well, maybe people do outsource their customer service, but I think hiring is better. Bringing someone in-house who then gets to learn everything about your company and then it's important enough to hire a person.
I think a great example of this is we all know Mabel's Labels. They have two people working on their social media accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are so involved. They sell globally. They sell to anybody who wants a label around the world, but they're involved in their Hamilton community. They're constantly cleaning up the neighborhoods. They're donating to charities. I see them at events all of the time.
And their executives are on Twitter as well.
Totally.
Julie's on Twitter. Totally. And all of them are on Twitter.
So yeah, they could hire out an agency to do that, but would that get the same response?
They hired in.
But what happens if you go into a circumstance where you are an entrepreneur, all right, and you are running the show, you are doing, you're working 40 hours a day, and you're going up, the math doesn't work, I know, but you're working so hard, and people are like, well, you need to use social and do this. And you're like, I can't, I don't have the time, but you're just starting up. You can't hire somebody for $30,000, $40,000 a year to do it. So what do I do?
You have the time.
Yeah. If it's important, you have the time. If you have the time to answer the phone to make the sale, you have the time to be on Twitter to answer.
And just think about it too. Like, you don't have to be on, you don't have to be on your phone 24 hours a day. Think about really, when are people engaging, and like, try to set out some time there. You don't have to be on. I'm not on 24/7. Mm-hmm. I have my alerts on if something happens, so I know. But like, I can't be. I'm doing this right now. I haven't been on Twitter in how long? I'm not on Facebook right now. Like, you're not on it all the time. Are
that's
you on right
point.
Now?
Good point. I should be on.
Scott's right always on.
Now. Always on.
But that's the big issue here, is realizing that classifying it as an actual business practice.
Yeah.
That it's not outside of my business. I need to tweet. Now I need to do this. And that's really the question. Do you want to connect with people? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Virtually. Well, and if the answer is no, then
don't do it.
And there is a perfectly legit answer though, too, right? You don't have to.
No.
If you don't want to, don't. No. You don't need to, don't. If your personality doesn't fit it, if you don't want to have time, you don't. If you say, I don't have to. We had a guy at one of the events we did at Tweetstock, and one in the audience is like, if somebody's not buying a new roof in the next 6 weeks, I don't want to talk to them. Like,
well, then stay off Twitter, dude.
Please, are you kidding me?
Please don't tweet. That was the exact sentence he said. I'm like, then like, don't. Bye. How do I find those buyers on the tweezer? Like, it's just like,
you don't.
You're run away.
You don't.
But I spoke with Julie, talking about Mabel's Label. So I spoke with Julie, and it was about bloggers. So people talking about whether they should be starting a blog for their business. And someone said, you know, I'm really busy. I'm running my business. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. I'm a parent. I don't have time. And Julie looked at them and said, don't tell me you don't have time.
Yeah.
Julie has six kids.
She has six children.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, if something is important, you make time for it. And it's only about value. You have to decide what has value, and then you make
and you
time
don't have
for
to
it.
Be on every single thing. You don't have to be on Google Plus and on the Instagram and everything. Find out what you want to use and what is the best thing for your personality, who you are, and use it. I love Instagram. I'm on it all the time. I love Twitter and I love Facebook. Those are the things I use personally the most. I'm on the other one. Sometimes I'm on Pinterest. Sometimes when I'm painting, you know, I'm painting something. Or I'm
but it's also where the community is that you want to embrace.
For sure.
Right? It's you also it's partial, you know, personal preference, but also where your audience is.
Yeah.
If everybody in Hamilton is using Twitter mostly and you choose to use Google Plus, then your impact may be different.
For sure.
Like, I'm making time right now for shortbread cookies.
That's important.
Wonderful.
That's probably the worst thing to eat. The worst thing to eat when you're trying to talk, because the shortbread dries out your mouth.
One of the things that Chris said too, we were talking, is about that many of your clients are also happen to be in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And you being able to know or have a be able to check the pulse of the city and what, because their clients are in Hamilton.
For sure.
Like, you have a feeling of what do people in Hamilton want. Like, if you're driving a car in Hamilton, what do you need to know about?
What do you need to know about the bike lanes?
Yeah, exactly. All the one-way streets.
Political issues and everything going on. You have to be on top of that.
And you can't fake that.
No.
And getting out into the community and knowing about that means when your clients come in and they sit down and they say, okay, so Chris, we're a car dealership in Hamilton, you're not like thinking that they live a life in California. You understand what a car dealership is because you understand what being in Hamilton means.
Yeah. For sure.
And you can't fake that. You need to be there.
No. And what I really love about the perspectives me and my partner Jen have is we have completely separate lives. I'm a downtown guy. I'm, a single for most part. I do have a partner. But, like, you know, I go out by myself all the time. I go out to eat. I don't shop for food and cook dinner. Like, I'm experiencing a different Hamilton than she has two kids. She lives up the mountain. Mm-hmm. She has a different life, and we can
even knowing what up the mountain means. You don't know that if you don't live in Hamilton.
You have to be from Hamilton.
It's not a real mountain.
I'm down the mountain. I know. I don't know why they say it's a mountain. I think the downtown is in a hole.
No, it's true. It's true.
Like,
it's
it
true.
Goes down.
It's not something, that's something I would say.
But don't you think Hamilton places don't... places have... Oh, Scott's choking on his shirt. But places have language, too. Like, you have to speak the language of who your clients are going to be. And 100%. So being really proud of Hamilton also means that if somebody says, you know, they're going to be late because they're coming from the mountain, you know
you
what
know
that,
that
means.
And if you said, well, you know, if you go up on the ridge, you know, people be like, what do you, why would you say that? You know, it's like your own language. If you said you're going to Hortons,
oh gosh,
Tim's,
are we going to talk about
which
this?
I think it should be Tim Hortons being the religious coffee place, which started in Hamilton.
He also thinks you should call Holt Renfrew's Renfrew's.
Okay, so Holt Renfrew's on Ottawa Street. Tim Hortons, it should be called Hortons. I call it Hortons. Everybody else calls it Tim's, apparently, which is wrong.
I call it Timmy Ho-Ho's.
Timmy. Which wins? Which? Debate over. Debate over. Now, the hyperlocal thing, does it, you think it hurts the brand at all? Do you think it hurts? Do you think it would stop you from getting, or does it not matter? Where if a client is from, because I refer you guys out. When people ask me who should be doing design and stuff, I refer you guys. And I don't look if they're Hamilton-based or not. Do you think, does that ever, or from the outside, you can't see that anyway?
I think it did. Yeah? It did. We would have meetings in Toronto where it was, you know, it could be a possible new business. And they're like, oh, you're from Hamilton? Like, what does that mean? Like, that does, why?
It's like a Manitoba.
And I think it's really changed because of the brand perception. And
but
no,
you've changed the brand perception in some ways to make it happen.
Think I'm part of it. I think there's hundreds of other people. I'm not taking any credit for it. There's hundreds of other people who are doing it. You know, Hamilton Economic Development somewhat changes it, not through, they do change it through some of the stories that they're presenting in the media. But there's hundreds of people who are doing that. And now when I go into me, they're like, oh, you're from Hamilton. That's like, that's a creative hotspot. Sure is.
It's a creative kite
string
hotspot.
So no, we work with clients all over the world, so it's not a big deal. And there's clients who like don't care about Hamilton at all. But
well, because when you go to the Kite String website, it doesn't say, you know, Hamilton Zone Kite String or something. But the way, so it's a way to do it where you can endear your local businesses and people without ostracizing outside business.
For sure.
There's a right way and a wrong way to do that, too. But I don't think there's no way around community other than you've got to be part of it. Right.
100%.
And then people, how many times people ask, well, how do we always say, this is the kills me.
Leverage.
How do we leverage community?
Yeah.
We leverage them. It's like saying, let's leverage charity. It hurts my soul. Right. You either believe weekly.
Oh my God.
Weekly. I get it weekly. How do we leverage like people's
just
emotions?
Put a pink ribbon on everything. You know?
Yeah. That's how it should work.
Seriously.
It's how people will approach us and say, you know, part of my back nonprofit, well, how do we leverage this now? I'm like, stop using that term first.
Yeah.
And I really think that if you want to leverage community with that term, then you're part of the community. And I get this from realtors all the time where they like the idea of being known as the community real estate person. They want to know how to do it without being in the community.
Yeah.
Like they want to really say, how do we leverage that? Well, okay, how often do you do things with the community? Well, we had an open house last week.
I mean, that doesn't count.
That's not community. That's your business. What are you doing for the community? Are you part of do you sponsor some soccer teams? Do you go to the Chamber of Commerce? No matter how painful they can possibly be.
Our Chamber of Commerce in Hamilton has changed big time. I am not a conventional person, and when I started my business, going to the Chamber of Commerce was painful for me. Yes. I wanted to die, and that's why, again, social media was like a savior, because I was like, oh, this is completely different than like business before breakfast or whatever. I'm like, what are we doing
before
from Cocoon. What is going on here? Why are we up so early, everyone?
That's late for them. Yeah.
I was the worst. So I just want to say the Chamber of Commerce, there's new ownership or people in, and it's very much more vibrant and more community-driven, and I'm very happy with it.
And we love the Hamilton Downtown Business Association because they're bringing me in to speak.
Absolutely.
They're wonderful. We love them. Go ahead, sorry.
I think one of the keys, though, when you're talking about Twitter, is that that's only part of what you guys do. Like, it's very easy, I think, to say, okay, so we're going to get connected with our community. We're going to tweet a lot. We're going to go out for dinner. We're going to tweet our food. We're going to talk about a little bit. So what other things do you do in the community? Like how much, and I know the answer, but how many other things do you do? Like where you physically leave your computer and you go?
Oh my God. I go to so many different events. I'm going to, like tonight, I'm going to the opening. We sponsor a local theater group and they put on four plays a year of musicals.
I'm sorry. I cut you on the spot.
Remember what it's called now.
We'll find it. We'll put it.
Hammer Entertainment.
Okay.
We sponsor them. We do all of their promo material and I'm going to their play tonight and I'm going to see a bunch of people. We used to put on an event called Christmas Spectacular, which it was a basically a giant Christmas party to raise money for a local charity that's near and dear to my heart, which is Culture for Kids in the Arts. I sit on their board. I sit on some other boards. I'm out all the time, and I'm doing it. I'm gonna say it's selfish only because it makes me feel good. Right. I go out and I do stuff to make myself feel good. And I think that's just why we're on the planet.
Yeah.
Like I go to Vegas to make myself feel good. I am in part of the community. Because when I go and sit on a board and I make a difference and I change something and I see when I have Christmas Spectacular and everyone's there and they're having a good time and they're supporting a charity that I care about, whoa, boom, holy cow.
That's why I don't think you can fake it, even though people do, but you can't fake it. You throw some money at an event and say, well, there you go. I'm now hooked into my community.
Yeah.
And it can't just be Twitter. I think it needs to be going out when it's hyper-local.
I don't sponsor an event by throwing any money at it. I will come and I will help out. I was just at an event the other day, Bike for Mike, which is coming up, and I handed out over 400 bikes to kids in East Hamilton who don't have bikes, and we were just gave them bikes and locks and keys and basically said, go and ride bikes in Hamilton and make sure we want the streets to be safe. So yeah, there's things like that where, you know, I'm doing it because it makes everyone in Hamilton feel good, and yeah,
which in turn makes you feel good.
Yeah, totally, right?
And it's okay to have that, right? Because that's what we get from doing things for other people too, is you feel good about it.
So when you're talking about sponsoring an event and throwing money at it, and a lot of people like put your logo on the brochure, I don't, when they send me an email saying, can we have your logo for the brochure, I don't even want to send it. I don't want it on your brochure. I want to do something else. But we sponsored an event where it was an arts event, and they're like, we'll put a business card size ad in the brochure. And I was like, I don't care about that. Doesn't matter. So what we did is we sponsored a drink. We paid for all the drinks that night, and we had little cute cards, and they were all called the Kite String Cocktail. The Kite String Drinky Poo. That's what it was called. And it was a signature drink that we wanted a flavor that would taste like our brand and who we are. And the first 100 people
We need to make up a drink that tastes like our brand.
You totally do. Can we do that? I know people who can do that.
Okay, thank you.
But that's
sorry
a
I interrupted you. That was exciting
you know,
to me.
I don't care about, you know,
arrogance and conceitedness and is what it tastes like, yes. I love it.
And coffee.
And cold coffee. That's the scent we're going for.
Because you keep reheating it, you never get to drink it.
If the company scientists...
Cold coffee and stale gum.
At least it's not, at least it's not Vegas smell.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. So it's, again, you're back to where community is being part of it virtually and in person. You do have to live it. And if you're going to do it casually and sponsor one soccer team once a year and that was it and get a picture at the end of the year, it's not the way it is. When I joined the Chamber of Commerce in Oakville, when I joined, they're like, can we have a business card? And then what they did a week later, they physically mailed out photocopies of sheets of business cards. I'm like, oh, well, obviously it's my number one business creator nowadays. This is the photocopied business card that was sent out 3 years ago that meant nothing. And the same thing, we get to the meetings, and it was just all this old kind of old school type of thing.
The BNI where they pass around the box, and if you're not a member, you can't take out of the box of the business card. I'm like, I don't want it.
No, it's forced, and that's forced networking, right? And that's a difference,
which is
why I don't like. Even though our last episode was one of the recent episodes about networking itself, I don't like teaching it. I think you connect. You connect with people. You find people with common interests that you like. You'll talk to them more. And whatever when you show up, there's two different ways of showing up at a community event. See, what can I get out of this? Or what can I do? That's really your two mindsets, right?
Yeah.
I think, too, sometimes it's easier in things like what Chris is talking about, like sponsoring. It's almost like why Twitter works for some people and it doesn't. He's also talking about it's not every event that they go to is about social media or every event they go to is about branding. Because that would be like only going on Twitter and talking about social media and branding. The theater company is something they love, something they want to give to the community. Bikes for Kids is something you feel strongly about. Those kinds of networking events where you're there talking about that, or you're on Twitter talking about music, or you're on Twitter talking about charity, is a way to connect with people that have a like interest that isn't about what you're selling to them.
Sure.
And I think that is more what networking should be.
Exactly what it should be.
I was listening to, and don't judge me, please, I was listening to John Tesh on the radio last night, only because the radio had turned on and I didn't have my phone with me to stream the music. So John Tesh is talking about like how to connect to people and like rule one.
That's a very good radio voice.
And I'm like, when did we forget how to connect to people? Ask them questions. Well, yeah, how are you today? I know how to do that, but I don't think people know how to connect with people anymore. And I don't think it's social media that's causing it.
I've seen the books, though. I've seen the thing where ask a leading question that your answer will be your service. Like, are you happy with your branding? That's what people would say to you. They say you should use that as an opener. That is your brand creating a good ROI? Like, that's the like you're like, I'm gonna leave now. Like, I don't want to talk to
you. I very rarely bring up what I do wherever I go. Right. And I let someone, if they're like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, this is what I do. Like, oh, interesting. And I let them come to me. I don't want to force that on anybody. Yeah. Would you like to rebrand today? I don't want to work with someone who I have to force into working with me. That sounds horrible.
But that's what it's taught. It's taught how to get an immediate ROI from networking, right? And ask them questions and wait
then
for,
move along quickly. If
and
you
wait for your
it.
Turn to answer and then keep going and keep going. It's a numbers game. Nine and nine no's may lead to the next yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, when it comes to ROI on social media, I had a tweet way back, probably 5 years ago, that said, I don't have a project right now, but I wish I did because I really want to work with KiteString. That was 5 years ago. 4 years later, that person called me when they had a project and they said, oh, I have a project for you now. I can't wait to work with you. Can we meet? Yeah, of course we can meet. I would love to meet you.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about that immediate, oh, well, if you can't give it to me now, I don't want to talk to you.
And you didn't put them into your customer relationship management software
every month. I started because I thought it was nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what that star is for. People are, you know, starting with it, favoriting it. Remind me for later. I don't know. But I'm like, I guess I'll start because it's a nice one. But that's ROI for me. That's how it works.
Right. Without having to say.
But people don't, they can't buy into that because it's not immediate and they can't measure it exactly. And it's, yeah.
And that's okay. You know, and then I'd rather have them not in the pool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Get out of the pool. Because you'd probably be in it anyways. So that's networking and that's community. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
That was great.
I appreciate it. So for Allison and for Chris and for myself, the rule of thumb is, go to Hamilton.
Go to Hamilton, definitely.
I think, yes. Yeah. All right, go to Hamilton. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.